Fun. Good to be back here again. So, the series is called Encountering Jesus, and this week you've been reading Matthew 16 to 20, and we're going to be looking and encountering what Jesus said about the church. Now, some of you will know this, some of you won't know this, but interestingly, there's actually only three times that Jesus explicitly mentions the word church in all of the Gospels, and they are all found in the passage, the chunk of Matthew's Gospel that we've been reading this week. They're found in Matthew 16 and Matthew 18. Most of the time, Jesus talks about the kingdom, and he talks about the kingdom again in relation to the church. Sometimes people will tell you, oh, well, Jesus never really envisaged the church. He just talked about the kingdom. The church is just some human institution that Jesus didn't. No. Jesus did talk about the church. He made some very clear points about the church. But he actually did it in quite a limited way. And we're going to be looking, therefore, at what he says. I thought it was a bit rude if Jesus only mentions the church three times and they're in the passages for this week. It was a bit rude to ignore them. So that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Some of you may have heard me talk about these passages before, and I make kind of no apology for that because I think they're important, but actually as I looked at them this week, I really felt some new things came to me as well. So even if you've heard me talk about this before, hopefully there will be some new stuff for you as well. And let's be honest, even if you have heard me talk about it before, you probably can't remember, so there we go. It is interesting, isn't it? Many of us have been to all sorts of seminars and talks about the church, and people will unpick all sorts of things about what the Bible teaches us about church. But in my experience anyway, it's rare. In fact, I personally, in all honesty, can't remember anyone doing it at all, for anyone to actually look at what Jesus said about the church, which is another reason why I think it's important for us to look at this morning. So the first example, is in Matthew chapter 16, 15 to 18. But before we jump into that, let's just look at the context. It's always good, I think, to look at the context of a passage. Some of you will have heard this before, that, you know, a text without a context is a pretext. So we just need to look at the context of where we pick this up in verse 15. And the context is really interesting and kind of amusing, really, in a way, although tragicomedy. So at the beginning of the chapter, it says that the Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus, and it says in this version here, they demand that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove his authority. Now, let's just take a quick reality check. What chapter are we in? Chapter 16. We are not in chapter 1, 2, 3, or 4. We are in chapter 16. And at this point, the religious leaders come to Jesus and say, well, you know, it's all very well, all the things you're saying, but if you could only show us a sign to show your authority, then we might believe in you. Now, I was here a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke from Matthew chapter 8. And in that chapter alone, you would have thought there were enough miracles and signs for people to have gone, you know what, I think maybe there might be some authority behind this man. But here they are, eight chapters later. And of course, you do understand there was someone going along with a sign following Jesus around saying, you're now in Matthew chapter 16. Anyway, but here we are in Matthew chapter 16, eight chapters later. They are saying, well, you know what, we would believe you if you showed us a sign, which kind of says quite a lot about human nature, I think. We will often find excuses not to believe in something rather than to believe. And certainly this seems to be the case with them. And so as a result of that, Jesus says to the disciples, you know what, guys, you need to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And the disciples, the intensely spiritual guys that they were, who have now been following Jesus for some time, and been with him, and there's the conversations we have recorded and all the conversations he had with them that we don't have recorded. And in response to this warning from Jesus, they say to each other, he's cross with us because we didn't bring the sandwiches. Paraphrase, but pretty much that's what they say. And Jesus, not surprisingly, expresses a degree of frustration with their lack of spiritual insight at that point. And in that context, he says, "Who are people saying I am?" And they tell him, and then he asks them, "But who do you say I am?" And in the light of their response to his comment about the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, I wonder, if I can put it like this, how much faith Jesus had for a good response from them. But Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus replied, "You are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn this from any human being." And again, my paraphrase is, "Oh, bless you, Peter. You didn't work that one out for yourself, did you?" "Now I say to you, you are Peter," which means rock, "and upon this rock..." By the way, that's an editorial comment. I don't think Jesus just kind of reminded Peter what his name meant. But anyway, "You are Peter," which means rock, "and upon this rock I will build my church." First time. "I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it." Now, there is debate, has been debate for hundreds and hundreds of years about what Jesus was saying was the rock that would be the foundation of the church. And there would be a whole wing of the church, which I'm sure you're aware of, that would be saying the rock that Jesus is referring to is Peter personally, and therefore the church would be built upon Peter and the apostolic succession following Peter, and therefore, and that's why there is, for some whole sways of the church, an individual who is the foundation of the church following on in apostolic succession from Peter. There would be another whole branch of way of looking at this passage, which would say, no, Jesus wasn't talking about the individual. He was talking about the statement, the revelation that came from Peter. I'm not going to spend the next 20 minutes going into that debate. All I'm going to say is, even if it is the person, Jesus makes that statement about the person on the basis of his revelation, on the basis of his understanding. Is that fair? So this revelation that Peter has, Jesus says, "Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you. It has been revealed to you by my Father in heaven." This revelation is obviously very, very important. It is the foundation of the church. The revelation that Jesus is the Son of God. The revelation that this is not just a nice human club, as Mark very graphically and well illustrated just then. You know, yes, our relationships are important. We will come back to that. They are vitally important. But the fuel, the center of it all has to be Jesus. And if we ever lose sight of that, then we are actually building on a different foundation. The centrality of this revelation of who Jesus is. Now, sometimes this word, revelation, has a bit of a kind of a mystical meaning. Sometimes people kind of talk, "Oh, I've got this amazing revelation." And it can get a little bit unhelpful, I think, in terms of making this something that, you know, a revelation is only something that the most incredibly spiritual people have, it's not really for the rest of us. So I've just got a little visual aid to demonstrate what in Greek the word revelation really means. If you could bring my little assistant out to the front, please, rather quickly, that would be good. So here we have someone, some of you might actually have seen what went on then, some of you might be able to guess, but nevertheless, we have here someone who is covered. Now, from the little bit that you can see, and from the size and shape and all the rest of it, you may have some ideas about this person. Some of you might know even who it is. But if I was to ask you a lot of detail about this person, you would not be able to tell me, would you? Because they are covered. Guess what? The Greek word that we get reveal and revelation from, it means to uncover. Can we uncover our individual, please? There we go. Now, uncovered, you could tell me a lot more about him, couldn't you? My first point that I believe, thank you very much. My first point, why is the church here? It is the job of the church to reveal Jesus. It is the job of the church to reveal Jesus on the basis of our revelation, on the basis of what has been revealed to us, uncovered to us, who Jesus is. We have the mandate to uncover that to the world. As someone once said, theologian, can't remember who it was now, it is the job of the church to make the God who is invisible visible in this world. The God who is unknown, known in this world. Why did I choose that particular picture of the silver platter? Which, by the way, just a little side point, took me a long time to find a picture that I was happy with. But I really felt it was important persevering with it. Because, for a start, I think there is that, it's the classic thing that sometimes you've had seen in films or whatever, where the chef, da-da, reveals the food, takes the cover away. There is the excitement of the revelation of what this food is on the platter. And as we reveal Jesus, I believe there is that excitement that we can communicate of just who Jesus is. There's another reason for using this illustration. Psalm 34 and verse 8 says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." And as I've said before, often I think the church, global, through the ages, has been a little bit guilty of reading the menu out without actually giving people an opportunity to taste and see. And I think it's true as well with this illustration of the platter. You know, it's almost like sometimes we're saying, look, this is how good Jesus is. But it's just like the person covered with the sheet. People can see so much, but actually, it's still covered. It's our job to reveal Jesus to the world. I believe this is what Jesus was saying about the church. It's the church's job. The foundation of the church is that we reveal Jesus to the world as we have that revelation. How do we do that? We do it by showing him in us, in all the ways that that's possible. Yes, through what actually the Pharisees and Sadducees were asking for, through the signs, that the miracles that can be performed, but not just that. Through our character, through who we are. How did Jesus say the world would know his disciples? By love. By the love we show for each other. Again, we'll come back to it in just a moment. But anyway, first point. What does Jesus say about the church? Well, that it's founded on the revelation of who he is. What does that mean for us? It's our mandate, our responsibility to reveal Jesus to the world. Second point. Well, and this point actually comes twice, really. In Matthew 16 and Matthew 18, Jesus says very nearly the same thing. Let's read it. First of all, he's again talking to Peter and I believe the disciples and us. "I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." And then a couple of chapters later in chapter 18, verse 18. "Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Now, I've not actually done a word study to absolutely give you all the details of this, but I've got a fairly strong impression Jesus didn't often repeat himself. Certainly not in such a short space of time. But this was important enough that Jesus, it seemed, wanted to drive this point home to his disciples, that they would really understand this in the context of talking about the church, as he was in 16 and does in 18. So what is this all about? Well, first of all, let's just quickly hone in on some of the important points. First of all, keys to the kingdom. What's that all about? Does that mean we decide who goes to heaven? No. So what does it mean? And binding and loosing. Now, again, some of us who've been around for a while may have been in all sorts of seminars and teaching which will have unpicked the principles of binding and loosing in great detail. I saw some smiles as I was saying that. And those of us involved in worship teams will also kind of have various thoughts about when people say spiritual warfare, which, by the way, doesn't just mean songs in the key of E minor and waving flags. But here Jesus seems very definitely to be making a point in relation to the church that what we're engaged in is not just something in terms of the, I can put it like this, the horizontal dimension of just human agency and human relationships. He is making a point here that the church definitely has a very spiritual dimension to it, a very spiritual aspect. I'll give you the keys to the kingdom. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And it's interesting the way that that is put around. He doesn't say whatever you loose in heaven will be loosed on earth, and whatever you bind in heaven will be bound on earth. It's the other way around. It seems to be that what we do here has an effect in a heavenly realm. Okay? All with me so far? Good. Now, last time I spoke, which was from Matthew chapter 8, we looked briefly at Jesus' confrontation of the forces of evil, both in terms of the calming of the storm and in terms of the two guys who were demon-possessed. Anyone remember that from your reading or from the talk? Okay. So let's just be very clear. There were occasions when Jesus, not just there, where Jesus very directly confronted demonic powers, the powers of darkness. And I think we ignore that at our peril all the time. No, my hands are up. Okay, then Jesus says. Okay, it might be that you've got a bit of a locked up situation. You can't sort it out between them. So, if you cannot sort it out just between the two of you, take one or two others. You know, it's all very gloriously vague. You know, one or two others. It's not, you will definitely. Take a couple of other people along. And then it talks about, okay, they can bear witness to it. But let's look at the reality of this. If I have a problem with Ben, which I don't, but he's just handy, and I've gone to Ben and still, it's a bit of, he's got his perspective, I've got my perspective. We don't often use the word perspective. We usually say he can't see what's right. But I've got my perspective, he's got his. Okay, so what am I going to do? So I'm going to say, okay, look, Ben, let's get Rachel and Sue along as well. Now, I then explain the situation to Rachel and to Susan. What am I doing when I'm doing that? I'm saying my perspective. Do I know they're going to agree with my perspective? No. When we open it up to others, we are taking the risk that actually they might see Ben's point of view. So actually to do this is not lording it over Ben. It's in humility saying, look, we can't get it. Let's see what someone else thinks, and let's agree that whatever they say, let's take their perspective. Now, if having done that, it's still a lockup, it's then this thing that we do find difficult because it's outside our sort of experience, but it does then talk about taking it to the church. But again, that is kind of, the church might decide against me. And what's this final bit about? Let them be to you as a Gentile or a tax collector. So, of course, we're obviously supposed to hate Gentiles and tax collectors, are we? No. It's a relational thing again. It's saying there is now a relational breakdown. They are not, in effect, part of the church. It doesn't mean they're cast out into outer darkness where there's wailing and gnashing of teeth. It means they are not relationally connected to you anymore because there is that relational breakdown. Make sense? And what are we supposed to do to Gentiles and tax collectors who are outside the church? Win them. Win them back. So now they're outside of the church. We've got the task now of winning them back. Does that make sense? Third thing, the church is to relate together. This is not just a nice added extra. It's part of what Jesus said as being central to the church, that we work things out relationally together. Taking risks with that. It's part of our mandate to show and release the kingdom. Sarah, Harriet, I wonder if you'd come back, please. We're going to be worshipping together to close the meeting, and let's just look at these points one more time. And what has the Holy Spirit said to you and to me? Well, first of all, what does it mean to you and to me in this next 7 days to reveal Jesus? To take the cover off to the world, to make the God who is unknown known, the God who is invisible visible in us. What will that mean to you in this next 7 days? What's the Holy Spirit saying to you about how you can release the kingdom in your life? To bring the rule and reign of God into the situations you walk into every day. Do we have that faith that as we walk into work every day, we are those who've got the keys to bring the kingdom or not? And what about this whole relating together thing? Have we got problems with anyone? I know that's always a tough one, isn't it, in the room? Because as soon as you go, if you say, well, if you've got a problem with someone, go and talk to them about it now. And everyone's going, oh, they've got problems together. So let me just say, you might want to pray with all sorts of people for all sorts of reasons in the next 10 minutes. One of them might be, you might want to go and just sort some things out. Or you might want to do that this afternoon, or don't wait too long, because if you leave it too long, you just won't do it. And if it's a lock-up situation, can you agree who you're going to involve as well? Can we stand together? Let me just pray. Holy Spirit, I just want to pray in this as we worship, as we come to you now in this close of the meeting, Lord, would you just carry on speaking to us? One of the things about releasing the kingdom, in Joshua chapter 1, Joshua's told that wherever he puts the sole of his foot, there that will be their land. I believe God says that to us. Wherever we put our foot down, we can release the kingdom. And that can obviously mean various things, can't it? It can just mean us stepping into a situation. It can mean, as sometimes we mean it, putting our foot down, saying, you know, no further. That Gandalf moment. So let's worship together. If we want to go and pray with someone, for all sorts of reasons, maybe you want to ask someone to pray with you about situations you're walking into that you want to put your foot down. You need to put your foot down. You need to release the kingdom. Maybe you're aware that you've been locking things up and you need to loose things. If there's things you want to pray about relationally, just generally want someone to encourage you, or you feel you've got something to encourage someone with, let's do that as we worship. Sarah.